Well, the ageing of farmers is a problem for Australian agriculture generally, but with the extremely high cost of rural land in the Northern Rivers, not to mention the hard work, unfavourable weather and uncertain returns, it's a particular problem here. The Australian Macadamia Society says the average age of macadamia farmers in this region is over 60. As the number of farmers declines and the number of people wanting to live in the hinterland increases, there's also increasing tension. So does farming land need to be protected? How do we sustain an ageing industry? Well, with me to talk about this and other issues this morning is Rosebank organic coffee and macadamia grower and processor, Kath Ford. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Sue Harnett from the fourth generation Harnett Dairy at Burringbar. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Rod Wright from the Clarence Valley. Good morning and welcome to you too.
Good morning, Joanne.
So can I start with you? Tell us what's happened to dairying in the Tweed since your husband's family began there all those years ago.
Well, there used to be hundreds of dairy farms. Every farm was a dairy. They had dairy and pigs. And I guess when there was the change in the late 60s from cream to milk, which was phased in over 5 or 6 years. A lot of farmers went out then because of the cost of infrastructure for tanker access and things like that, milk fats, and there was, you know, a large expense there. And then in 2000, with dairy deregulation, the price of milk dropped drastically, and we lost a lot of farmers then. There's now only 8 dairies left in the Tweed.
So that's a huge decline, isn't it?
Like you said, you know, they're getting close to retirement age, if not already past retirement age.
What have been the consequences of having fewer dairies?
You lose a lot of your support groups, I suppose. We still do have a support group through Norco, but it's broader based. You know, it ranges across a larger area, whereas before you had a large group of farmers that you could borrow machinery from or purchase machinery together or get advice from, like, pertinent to your exact location. We've sort of lost that connectivity sort of thing, if you like. We used to have a truck that came around every week with all our dairy supplies on it, but there's not enough farmers now to warrant that, so we have to make sure everything's ordered in advance.
Mm.
All those sort of issues that just make it that little bit harder to farm.
Kath Ford, your father was a pioneer in the macadamia industry, so yeah, you're effectively a second-generation macadamia farmer, of which there are not that many.
What are
the consequences for macadamias? Have you seen those changes start to have an impact?
There's a huge impact on it because people usually used to process their macadamias on farm, and now they're finding it just a tad too hard. As they get older, they're thinking this is too much work for the return. I mean, when you think about big entities, big supermarkets getting a return on their capital of 15%, and a farmer gets less than 1%, you start to think, well, why am I doing this? You know, it's a hard row. So it has been adapted in this area that companies do de-husk and process nuts for them. But yes, it's a growing problem.
Mm. And what sort of impact is it having on supply at this stage? Do you think that you're seeing the results?
It's not at the moment because the processors are very happy to get supply and they will take care of it. In other words, as they get older, they'll deal with it and go on farm and help out the grower. But that doesn't mean that after that farmer dies, that farm will be taken over by a younger person. It's kind of a problem with the image of farming and basically what is a farmer? Is a farmer a labourer on the land or is a farmer a specialist on the land? There's two different things, and I think people are confused, and so they're not quite sure.
Mm. Well, on the Rural Report this morning that share farming arrangements are becoming a feature of the macadamia industry, just starting to become so. The sugarcane industry is also going down that route in this area because sugarcane land is unaffordable for a lot of young farmers.
Well, Joe, as I said, the return on capital is so low. In a good year, you'd be lucky to make 1%. So think about the fact that that's why the farmers' markets and things like that have picked up, because it's just not equitable to go into these big operations and think, well, you know, I can hand this on to my son or daughter. And as my daughter said, Mum, I don't want to work as hard as you.
Rod Wright, you've looked into sustainability for Foodlinks and Northern Rivers Food and the Clarence Valley Council. What did you find?
Well, I think it's recognised nationally that we've got an ageing farming population, but at the same time there's great opportunities in that we see a huge expansion in the demand for Australian produce in Asia, and as the wealth of some of the third world increases, there's demand for quality products. So I think while we might see a decline in dairy and some of the other industries, we're also seeing an increase in other areas across the food economy. We've tried to, with forums like today, connect growers and farmers and I guess show the value of our farmers, because most of our Northern Rivers councils rely on primary producers as a core base for their local economies, whether that be cane growers, croppers, cattle growers, fishing industry, and in part tourism industry. Agritourism is a huge and growing business. A grey nomads corps is an example of, you know, an ageing population. It's just one of the many labour forces that farmers rely on for picking and other areas. So I think it's a very complex area. In the Northern Rivers, we did have the food links, which I guess started off this discussion in our region. And we've tried to carry that on. That was more focused, I guess, at the local government and trying to move towards more sustainable practices in both at a broad acre level and in the urban sector. We've now tried to involve a lot of other partners in the region. So we've got the peak organisation, Sustain Northern Rivers, who's really got DPI, the councils, 28 key peak organisations in the area, the universities, the TAFEs, the colleges. And we are, I guess, if you see the catering staff here at the TAFE, I mean, it is putting a value on trying to make the most of what we've got in the Northern Rivers.
Kathy, it sounded like you wanted to add something to that.
I mean, it really comes down to the grassroots. How are we going to get people back on the land, and how are we going to appreciate what we have, and how are we going to keep going? Essentially, people talk about sustainability, but the sustainers of our society are the farmers. So if you think about how can we do this, and there isn't even an apprenticeship for farming. If you think about, you know, what can we do? How can we identify these people as being the true sustainers of our land and make them qualified so they can say, yes, professionally, that is what I do. I'm a farmer and I'm a good farmer.
Does there need to be some sort of requirement maybe looked at down the track that certain farming land is retained as farming land, and that it's not left as a lifestyle property that, you know, maybe becomes overgrown with weeds if the owners are absent, that sort of thing? Is that something that you think might be considered down the track, or is that...?
I think there is already planning in place. I know state planning have put... zoning. Some of our land is zoned regional protection farmland, so that means that it's significant to the region, and there is state significant farmland as well. So it has started, but it doesn't give you any compensation for the fact that if you can't make a living off that,
right,
you're then a bit snookered as to what else you can do with that land.
And who else is going to operate it?
Yep, and who else is going to operate it, as Kath was just mentioning there too. The fragmentation of land has occurred already in this area. There are a lot of small lots. I think most councils have moved to prevent that continuing. There's nonetheless been a lot of angst about changes to the planning system and what that will mean for farmers. Is that angst well-founded, do you think? Sue, perhaps we can start with you.
Well, we have two farms. One's 150 acres and the other's a bit over 200 acres. The 200-acre farm is our main dairy farm, and it's quite fragmented. It used to have the Pacific Highway running through the middle of it, and the railway line, and lots of different closed roads. It's got the council water reservoir. All the main telecom lines are all underground. Overhead power, a community in the middle of the farm, sort of like a the town of Burringbar was sort of subdivided off the side of the farm in the early days. So we have lots and lots of neighbours. And I think when they zone land, regionally significant farmland, they don't take any of that into account. It's almost like they've looked at green spots on a map and gone, oh, that looks like a good spot. We'll make that regionally significant farmland.
And what challenges does that pose for you?
Lots of challenges. When it was the Pacific Highway, with cattle on both sides of the Pacific Highway, that was a huge challenge. So when the highway was moved, it was a big relief, because we actually walk our cows across the road, sort of not on the main road, but on a little road to the side of that. So that is always a challenge. Lots of neighbours is a challenge as well. You know, most of them
explain
are great.
Yeah.
You know, they're the first to tell you if you have cattle in trouble or cattle out or anything like that. Some people are new to the area and don't understand farming ways and can pose a few problems, but normally after a little while they realise the benefits of living next to that big green open space, and, you know, their kids watching cows being born, and, you know, it's a lovely experience for most people living next to a farm.
Kath, what's been your experience of that that impact of people who've come from the city who don't have maybe, you know, connections to the land as once, you know, people did?
We've got 8,000 certified organic macadamia trees, but the first thing that people will say when they move in now, can you tell us when you're spraying? And I have to go through the whole thing and, you know, go, oh. But the trouble we have with zoning and things like that is all this sort of limited accommodation that you've got to have a certain acreage to put an abode on it. So we find it really hard to get people to work in Rosebank. And Rosebank's only 20 minutes out of Lismore, but because they have to drive from Lismore to Rosebank, but there's no accommodation. So we're quite keen to maybe get that zoning reviewed around our area, because it's a real problem.
Now, what ways can councils be more supportive? Obviously, that's one of them. What ways can councils be more supportive of farmers?
Well, I think that they need an understanding pill, really. They need to come and have a really good look on what it takes to go into farming. And I know that I'm not trying to make out that our job is any harder or easier than anyone else's, but I think at the end of the day, there's a general lack of understanding of what it takes to run a sustainable farm. And it's not about the money, it's about almost infrastructure cooperation. So, for example, you know, yeah, we need to be able to get people to work for us who don't live, you know, an hour and a half away, who can basically go out and get, say, a sandwich or something for lunch at the corner store, but we don't have a corner store anymore, and so all our infrastructure is gone. In Rosebank, we don't have a store, we don't have anything. So, and that's not uncommon for a lot of little villages around, and yet we're looked at to provide sustainability, although we can't get any ourselves. Mm.
Rod Wright, you've obviously had a lot to do with farmers in your role with council. Perhaps other divisions of council don't necessarily have the same sort of connection. Is that something you would see?
I'd say you know, there's all different beasts within councils, like there is that with like there is within agricultural systems. So I'm not going to generalise. I guess my response to that is that just this week we've had a roadshow of people within the food movement going around to the councils, talking to officers about how they can support things like roadside stalls, things that make it a little bit easier for farmers to be able to both operate and move their product. And the planning protection's really been there for a long time as far as identification of prime agricultural land. So that hasn't gone away. That doesn't necessarily make it any easier to farm. Just some examples of things that are going towards helping the type of things we've just heard about is in the sugar industry, they've, through assistance with RDA and the council, they've set up a labour pool there where young people that are looking for work can come into that labour pool, and then they're called up in a casual labour pool. So there's a number of initiatives happening around the region that not everyone in the region might be aware of. They'll gradually, hopefully, gather steam and help across other industries that struggle with labour and, you know, the viability of farming. So I guess it all comes back to what we're hearing about today, that the bottom line is people need to be able to make a living from it, and making it attractive enough for people to be able to do that is, you know, something that councils are just as interested in keeping their economies locally, you know, going well as everyone else.
Are farmers, Sue?
We're just going through the process of putting on an on-farm outlet at the moment with Tweedshire Council. And it's been a fairly long, drawn-out process, and we're still continuing with it. But I think a huge help would be if councils had a rural planner.
Yes.
So when there was an application put in for a rural, you know, proposal, the person dealing with it was actually a rural planner, not a town planner. That would make a huge difference.
Because agribusiness is one way that, given that you are landlocked, that you've seen
that's
that you
right.
can grow the business.
Yes.
But that's seen differently, treated differently to the farming enterprise that you currently run.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very differently.
Kat?
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I think it's, as I said, it's an understanding pill, and it's not a hard pill to swallow. I think at the end of the day, you're right, there's a difference between town planning and farm planning. And while you don't want to dissect roles too much, there has to be that. And also the priorities that farmers put on their land is essentially maybe not the things that a town planner would put on their land.
Mm. Can I just jump in there, Joanne? I think Tweed's probably one council that has got identified the importance of agriculture in the broad sense, and they've got their own sustainability agricultural officer. They're working closely to develop a sustainable ag strategy for the Tweed. So things like that you raise, I think it's important as that strategy goes out, an exhibition that the agricultural sector raises those type of issues, because that's definitely what, as Tweed as an example, is looking for.
Be a thing that we're it's all about the fact that we should realize that we are the sustainers, and I think we should have a rural priority. I think that's what it's all about. My ideas might be a bit radical, but I actually think that when you talk about sustainability, you should identify with who it is and give them the absolute support you can.
It's been a great discussion. Thank you very much for joining me in the chilly weather today. We've got outdoors here at Wallingbar. Rodney Wright from Clarence Valley Council, Kath Ford, macadamia and coffee grower, organic from Rosebank, and Sue Harnett from the Tweed, the Harnett Dairy there. Thank you very much.